This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, and primary healthcare provider Qualitas recently launched a nationwide program to provide affordable primary healthcare services for refugees. Assistant Program Officer for UNHCR Malaysia, Dr. Sushila Balasundram, joins Dr. Junaidi Ismail to discuss the medical needs of refugees in Malaysia and where they can receive affordable health services. So let's start with defining, in the context of today's conversation, who is a refugee?
All right, a refugee by definition is someone who's out of the home country of origin and because of a well-founded fear of persecution is unable or unwilling to return to the home country. They may be persecuted because of race, religion, nationality, because of their political opinions, or maybe they're members of a particular social group.
So within the context of Malaysia then, how many refugees do we have here registered under the UNHCR? And, you know, primarily where are they from?
Currently, we have 150,000 refugees registered with us. 93% of them are from Myanmar, and about 54,000 of them are actually from the ethnic Rohingya groups. We also have some refugees from Syria, from Yemen, and also from Pakistan and Sri Lanka.
And if we have to break it down, I mean, for most of us, I think we will be fortunate enough in our lifetimes not to be refugees. Yeah. But for these people, these groups of people, when they get here, where do they go? What do they do? What is the process of becoming a refugee?
All right. Most of them are coming through, maybe through, they might fly in or they might come in through borders, maybe smuggled by agents. Some of them will have already contact with some of their community members here. They try to find out where their people are and try to link up with community members. Most of them will eventually come to us to apply for asylum. And many of them will eventually be going through the process of registration, refugee status determination, and they'll be processed for possible durable solutions if that's the avenue pursued. Or sometimes they also come to our office quite regularly for assistance and to help find their way around in terms of navigating services that they need.
So what is the role of the UNHCR in the midst of all of this, in the midst of them trying to figure out kind of another country, a whole new system? You know, what would you say is your role in their daily life?
Right. Firstly, of course, our mandate is the protection of refugees, and in the first thing that we do is ensure that they are carrying our documents after the refugee status determination process. That's the first thing in terms of ensuring protection. But in their daily lives, they come to us for needs like, you know, they need to go to the hospital, they need some support in that, they need to know where the children can go to school. They need to get some assistance because they may be having problems in managing their daily lives. So some of that, those are the kind of assistance cases and requests that come daily to our offices for support.
Overall, what would your assessment be of how refugees are treated here in Malaysia?
Generally, refugees, I think most of Malaysians are aware of refugees. They do have a difficult time navigating around our usual environment. But there's a certain level of tolerance in terms of from the authorities in recognizing our cards. And I think in general, the public is quite generous in wanting to reach out and to help once they're aware of the situations in Malaysia.
So, I mean, we're talking specifically about healthcare today.
Yes.
What are their healthcare needs?
Like all of us, we all have very basic healthcare needs. You know, we likely to fall sick, we have coughs and colds, but we don't know. We have our access to services, we have clinics everywhere, but refugees may be, you know, not able to get to these services because they may not have the money, clinics may not be necessarily near to them. So in general, their healthcare needs are very much like all of us, but all the more challenged because of their position in Malaysia.
So Let's talk about this idea for the refugee healthcare program. How did it come about? What was the impetus for it all?
Pursuing one of our public health strategy objectives in expanding the primary care access for refugees, we were looking at the possibility of involving the private sector here. We have all this while been having NGOs providing support, but that's just really localized in KL. Our refugees are throughout the country, they are everywhere. And to look at, you know, they already have services provided by the government, which they do have 50% discount, but yet again, many of them are in geographical locations that is not near enough and they have to spend so much just to get to a clinic. So looking at Qualitas, I had noticed that they had a whole wide network of clinics spread out throughout the country. And I thought it would be good to, you know, try and ask, you know, if possible, they could open the doors for refugees, and that will expand tremendously the primary care network for refugees.
And from Qualitas' point of view, what interested you in the program? You know, what was it that made you think, okay, this is something that we would like to get involved in?
Right from inception of the company back in 97, our founder always had this vision to actually provide more from a network of clinics. Now, having 72 clinics, and when Dr. Sushila came over to our office, we immediately saw that this was something that was in line with our vision to provide something more through this network. And as she mentioned, when we actually compared where these communities were, we found that a lot of these places were very close to these communities. And it was easy from then on.
So prior to this program coming into existence, where would refugees seek medical services? I mean, would it be primarily in government centres?
Yes, by and large, the government centres, but also we do have NGOs providing either clinic services in certain locations or through mobile clinics, which then again are not frequent enough to meet the needs of the refugees.
And with this particular collaboration, how does it work? I mean, not necessarily the nitty-gritty of how you worked it out, but how will it work on the part of the refugee? So I can, you know, if I'm a refugee, I can just walk into any Qualitas centre?
Yes, as long as they have they registered with UNHCR, they have the UNHCR documents, they can just walk up to any Qualitas clinic and produce those documents and enjoy the special rates that we've provided for them. And I think our promise to that community, or whichever community, be they Rohingyas or from Yemen or even other parts, is that they will not be treated any differently to any other patient of ours.
Are there also other provisions for making them comfortable in terms of, for example, language or things of that nature? Because I think that can also be another step of intimidation. It's hard to say, I have a headache. You know, it's simple things like that.
Sure. We've actually had requests from certain communities, and in some of our clinics where large numbers of these communities actually go, we are in talking terms with the leaders to see if we could enlist their own help, someone from their community, to be stationed in the clinic. Having said that, I think we have gone about and given some basic Rohingya, Myanmarese language, handouts to our doctors and nurses at the front counter, so at least they can greet them in their local language, just to give them that added comfort value.
So when we talk about the healthcare services being subsidized, who is providing the subsidy?
Qualitas.
For both of you, is this a sustainable model? I mean, when we talk about refugees, people we're seeing are remaining displaced for longer periods due to longer conflicts, sometimes not, you know, and displaced for various reasons, sometimes not going back to their former country because it's not possible, sometimes not moving on because that's also very difficult. Will this change how health services are delivered to them when we're seeing people remain for longer periods of time?
That's exactly what we had in mind in terms of sustainability, because more and more refugees are in refugee situations for protracted durations of time. And we can't respond from an ad hoc emergency humanitarian response. It's more taking a developmental outlook and looking at all the possibilities of a more sustained provision of services. So in that sense, we're also looking at minimizing the burden on the public health systems. So reaching out to the private sector is something that I think we are looking into doing the world over, and why not in healthcare as well. In this way, at least the services are provided in, you know, we are working together with private sectors to make sure that this is culturally appropriate and making it accessible throughout the country, and ensuring that they are also paying some amount and it's not totally free, building some level of self-reliance throughout the community. For the long run, I mean, I don't think any refugee would also want to depend on handouts. It's a matter of dignity, you know. It'd be great. The other determinants of health, like, you know, maybe access to livelihood in future may be available for them. That will also help them in a great way. But right now, in expanding this, this is already a great change for them in able to reach out to more providers and ensuring that they have access to primary care.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Sushila Balasundaram from UNHCR Malaysia and Dr. Junaidi Ismail from Qualitas, and they're talking about their collaboration to provide a refugee healthcare program. Up next, we find out whether there are other models in other countries that could show us the way. You are listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. My guests today are Dr. Sushila Balasundaram, Assistant Program Officer for UNHCR Malaysia, and Dr. Junaidi Ismail from Qualitas. We're talking today about a refugee healthcare program that's been launched. This is something new to Malaysia. Are there refugee healthcare models in other countries that demonstrate how it can work here, or that we based this on?
I think we are probably one of the first to have a huge primary care network in the private sector. There are, in certain operations where they deal with private hospitals, it's a one-to-one agreement. But in terms of a network of providers, this may be the first of its kind. We also do work with private sector in the area of insurance. We currently have refugee medical insurance with the RHB insurance, but that model of insurance with the private sector has already been started, for example, in Iran for the Afghan refugees and in certain countries like Cambodia. So it's not new working with the private sector, but it's just expanding the kind of services that we are seeking through the private sector.
What is required for this kind of division of labour to work and to deliver on collective results? What are the things that need to be in place?
I think in the first place was having a clear picture provided to the private sector of how refugee communities are, linking them with the communities directly for them to understand how they're living and what access to have to basic services and how they can come in and fill those gaps. So a lot of close communication and direct communication with the communities are essential in ensuring that this succeeds.
How are we ensuring that by providing medical care to refugees, they're going to be a benefit rather than a burden to the health services, especially considering the fact that we are still a developing country?
I wouldn't consider it a burden. I mean, you see, just like any other Malaysian or any other person, they have, in fact, it is a right, it is a basic human right to have basic healthcare. And this is what Qualitas does, provide primary healthcare services. If left unattended to, this could be a bigger problem than what it currently is. People who do not have access to healthcare, for example, may actually go around with communicable diseases, and then that would spread to even the Malaysians as well. So I think it is important that we address their healthcare needs, and in that particular way, you're actually addressing the whole sustainability of the entire healthcare model in Malaysia.
And again, the people who are going to be eligible for this are people who have the UNHCR registration, is that
yes.
Correct? Who decides on who receives health assistance and how? So if somebody walks in and, you know, just says, oh, I need help, I mean, will they receive the full gamut, I guess, of healthcare?
Okay. I think as healthcare providers, as doctors, we are bound by oath to actually provide medical aid to anyone who walks into our doors. Whether what form of payment mechanism that is secondary. So in the case of emergency, that question doesn't even arise. Where else, when it comes to basic and healthcare with the normal common ailments, and I think the list of services that we have currently provided for this community, then it's just the basic UNHCR identification documents. So it is our frontliners who have been trained at the clinics to actually identify these people. And they just registered through that particular channel and payment mechanism.
Dr. Sushila, how are people being informed about this, within the refugee community? I mean, I'm assuming there is it's not as easy as sort of blasting it out and hoping that it reaches people.
Yeah, I think we have different avenues for that. Firstly, through our contacts with the community leaders. We have a committee liaison unit which meets regularly, either with the leaders or with the committees directly through an information hub. So this goes on throughout the country at different times. So word is being spread out through there. We are getting brochures out on this, and also Qualitas themselves are doing community outreach directly to meet the communities and explain what the program is about, and also to make contact and let them know that they're there as their service providers.
We spoke about language earlier. Are there any other special considerations that need to be kept in mind when providing medical services to refugees, for example, cultural competence or even things like potential PTSD?
Right. There are certain things that we will look into in terms of building the capacity of the doctors in Qualitas. We are already talking about like possible trainings in getting them to be familiar about different refugees and their different backgrounds and what are the possible morbidities related. But to PTSD itself is not something that you will easily diagnose. I mean, refugees in general go through traumatic episodes, but doesn't mean that all of them have PTSD. It's a diagnosis with certain criteria involved. I think PTSD is not that unfamiliar to many of the doctors, but leave aside that, there are many other issues that, that the doctors can get familiarized with easily through the contact with us. But by and large, after all these years with working with refugees communities, the kind of disease patterns that we see are not that remarkably different from what we see in the Malaysian population. So I don't think it's such a huge challenge for the doctors to actually manage this population well.
With that said, then, what is the biggest challenge for healthcare workers who are dealing with refugees?
I think apart from the language and the cultural differences, I don't think there's too much of any challenge. Of course, at the end of the day, if you're talking from the private sector, there is the funding. Who's going to pay for this healthcare? I think that's the other challenge. With primary care, it's easy because it's primary care. But when you start going into tertiary care, costs can be very intimidating and it puts off a lot of people. So I think being able to pay, especially at tertiary care level, I think that's a big challenge as well.
What are the most urgent ways that you would like to see the UN and other humanitarian agencies engaging and improving with how they deal with refugee health?
The more urgent ways, I think in terms of urgent needs, I think we are looking prioritizing that already in terms of urgent response in emergency situations the world over. In Malaysia itself, I think there's nothing that is immediately urgent right now. We are in a protracted situation. It's a more managed way of dealing with healthcare. It's more looking into a comprehensive long-term healthcare provision that ensures the curative, not just the curative components are taken care of, but move into the preventive components as well to reduce the mobilities that we see among the refugees. And one of that is actually moving into health education and disease health promotion as well. This is prime importance for them to understand the basic causation of disease, why it's important to keep surroundings clean, have personal hygiene, basic things like that. that may not, they may not have had access to such information before. So that is something that we want to work on through a more community-based approach in empowering the communities to train them to know about such things and to have a level of skills built within the community to manage these situations themselves.
For people who are listening who think, hey, I know somebody who might be able to benefit from what we're discussing, where would they be able to go to get more information?
They could walk into any of our Qualitas clinics. It's all there on our website at qualitas.com.my. Or I think Dr. Sushila may have other avenues as well.
Yeah, we also have, through our office, we have our brochures. We have the list of clinics that's available. So you can very well direct them to our office for further information.
And finally, for both of you, what message would you like to convey in terms of refugee healthcare and our collective responsibility in that sense?
Okay. For me, I think, as I mentioned earlier, it is important for us to help this group of people manage it. Because by doing so, you're actually managing and protecting Malaysians also. Outbreaks of diseases which we barely hear in the past are now occurring simply because of this influx of people migrating in. So I think it is the responsibility of all Malaysians to actually help on this matter. In fact, if I may ask, request, we hope we're not the only corporate organisation that actually embarks on this. We'd be happy to have other partners coming in and be part of the same program where we can then expand and extend this range of services for this community.
Yeah, and from UNHCR, I think we'd like people to understand that refugees often find themselves in vulnerable situations that put them at risk for more diseases. So having them access information and services to manage their health better is of public health good for everybody. And if the general public is willing to put a hand out and help us, there are many, sometimes we have really urgent needs among our health programs in terms of life-saving interventions. And we have a refugee welfare fund set up with one of our main health partners, is Zuchi Foundation. They can very well contribute to that to help some of our cases, for example, kids who need cardiac surgeries urgently. So this is one of the ways that the public can also help support access to healthcare for refugees.
Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Dr. Sushila Balasundaram from UNHCR Malaysia, as well as Dr. Junaidi Ismail from Qualitas, and we've been talking about their refugee healthcare program and the need to provide healthcare for refugees. You've been listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.